From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, January 8th, 2026. The long-running lawsuit over Maine's failure to provide attorneys to indigent defendants was back before the state Supreme Court today. As Caitlin Badion reports, the question before the court now is if the suit can include the state of Maine as a defendant.
Assistant Attorney General Paul Souter argues that the state is covered by sovereign immunity and can't be named in the lawsuit brought by the ACLU of Maine. Instead, he says, the correct defendants are state agencies like the Maine Commission on Public Defense Services. Souter says if the state were to be a party in the case, it can't provide additional relief and would open up other legal debates. Plaintiff's attorney Jordan Bach says the Maine Commission on Public Defense Services is making the same argument.
I think what's critical here is the MCPDS defendants have said throughout this case, they, quote, do not have the power to provide the relief demanded in plaintiff's proposed amended complaint. They've said they cannot provide the relief demanded, and they've repeatedly said that the ultimate party in interest is the state.
Bach says that leaves the state to solve the problem. The state's appeal focuses only on one count of the lawsuit. If the law court rules in favor of the state, the other elements of the case will still go forward. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Badion.
Governor Janet Mills says she's allowing a bill that authorizes tribal nations to operate online gambling to become law. In a written announcement, Mills says she hopes the revenue will help improve the livelihoods of the Wabanaki Nations. Shayla McCormack, chief of the Mi'kmaq Nation, says online gambling will provide sustainable funds to deliver needed resources to the community.
The benefits that our people are going to have, the resources, the economic development that's going to happen, and I'm just very, very excited for all the tribes.
The online gambling bill was one of dozens held by Mills after the legislature adjourned last June. She had the option to either veto the bill or allow it to pass 3 days after the start of the new session. Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins today supported a resolution that would limit President Donald Trump's power to carry out further attacks on Venezuela. Steve Missler has more.
Collins was among five Republicans who joined Democrats to back the measure, a signal that some in the GOP are worried about the president's unilateral strikes against foreign countries. It was also a contrast from Collins' position in November, when she voted against a resolution that would have required congressional authorization to use military force in Venezuela. Democrats Governor Janet Mills and Graham Plattner, who are both trying to unseat Collins this year, have been sharply critical of the November vote. Collins said the previous resolution was overly broad, and she recently backed the U.S. military operation that captured Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. The resolution that advanced Thursday still needs additional votes. It has little chance of becoming law because Trump would need to sign it. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Lewiston City Councilor Iman Osman submitted a letter of resignation to the council this morning. Osman was indicted last month on gun theft charges. He pleaded not guilty in Lewiston District Court this week. The council had also voted to investigate his residency qualifications. Lewiston Mayor Carl Schelin praised Osman's decision to step down, saying it was in the best interest of the city. The city council will hold a special meeting tonight to discuss filling the vacant seat. One of the largest off-site bakery and delivery contractors for Dunkin' franchises south of Augusta closed its doors this week, affecting nearly 100 workers. Mid-Maine CPL, located in Lewiston, said in a letter to employees that the decision was due to aging infrastructure and high operating costs. But Joe Cabral, who worked at the facility for over a decade, said he saw the closure coming after the company failed to pass health and safety inspections.
When we walked in on Monday, they had us all gathered up in their in what we call the running room, which is where they sort out the donuts for the orders to send out within the trucks and all that. And they gathered us up and dropped the bomb on us.
Company leadership could not be reached for comment. The State Department of Labor said it got no notice of the closure. State lawmakers are considering whether to name a portion of Route 3 in Hancock County after Luke Gross, a sheriff's deputy who was struck and killed by a motorist in 2021. Hancock County Sheriff Scott Kane told state lawmakers during a public hearing today that Gross was an exemplary public servant.
Luke was the kind of officer every agency hopes for and every community deserves. He was dependable, steady, and took his responsibility to serve others seriously.
Gross served in the Hancock County Sheriff's Office for 18 years. He was investigating a crash on the side of Route 3 in Trenton when he was struck and killed by a pickup truck. Maine's handling of child welfare cases improved incrementally last year, according to Ombudsman Christine Alberi. Alberi told members of the legislature's Health and Human Services Committee today that 47% of cases reviewed by her office had issues with a detrimental effect on the safety of children or the rights of parents. While that failure rate is still high, Alberi said it marked the first time in 5 years that it was below 50%. The new report comes amid ongoing scrutiny of how the state monitors children under its supervision. Recent child deaths have prompted another bill by state lawmakers to create a dedicated child welfare agency that operates separately from DHHS. Alberi said consolidating child services is intriguing, but
I do worry right now that if we did that, some of this progress that we're seeing would be derailed.
She said caseworkers at the Office of Child and Family Services are still lacking resources and that improvement was uneven across the state's regional offices. However, she said interagency cooperation and practices had improved. According to state data, roughly 30 Maine children died each year between 2021 and 2024, including some supervised by the state's welfare system. Maine has among the lowest child deaths per capita, according to the Kids Count Data Center. Registered nurses at the Northern Maine Medical Center in Fort Kent voted Wednesday to recertify the union they formed in 2024. The nurses are members of the Maine State Nurses Association, an affiliate of National Nurses United. The vote comes during ongoing contract negotiations that began nearly 2 years ago. The union says the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation, an anti-union organization, was behind the effort to decertify the union. Nurses at Maine Medical Center in Portland faced a similar challenge in 2022 and also voted to keep their union. The Maine State Nurses Association represents over 4,000 nurses and caregivers from Portland to Fort Kent. 2025 was a turbulent year for movie theaters. The box office was down and tech companies made takeover moves on legacy studios. But in some small corners, film fandom is thriving. A Portland nonprofit that's been collecting and preserving older movies on film is screening them to a devoted and growing audience. Filmgoers say this microcinema offers a communal experience that's increasingly rare in the age of streaming. And as Nicole Ogrisco reports, it's using films from the past to cast light on the present.
It's not your typical movie theater, just a nondescript white building located in an industrial zone on the Portland waterfront. Inside, there's a warehouse feel, but it's cozy. Rows of folding chairs face a large projector screen that hangs from the ceiling. There's a serve-yourself popcorn maker at the back, and hundreds of multicolored film reels line the shelves around the perimeter of the room. The name of the cinema is...
I say Kinonic. Some people say Kinonic. Some people say...
Kinonic.
And we decided that it was in keeping with the way we think of ourselves, that there is no official pronunciation. It's all about how the speaker views it and how they want to say it.
I think I'm going to say Kinonic in this conversation.
No, you're wrong.
Kinonic co-founder Andy Graham says its origins go back about a decade when he acquired a film collection from a friend and mentor. Since then, the nonprofit has brought in more than 1,800 films and shows them most Wednesday and Saturday nights. On a recent Wednesday, a few dozen people have braved the icy conditions and packed into the small cinema.
All right. Hello, everybody. I did not expect this turnout for a really obscure film.
Tonight's feature is Whiskey Galore, a comedy from 1949 and part of a recent series of screenings that explore crime and the law.
Because I thought it was a really fun take on when a community collectively decides that the law is completely irrelevant to their situation.
What films are shown and when has become a bit of a creative obsession for co-founder Skylar Kelly, who also runs the projector at most screenings and offers brief introductions to each film. Kelly says he likes to think about what might be happening in the country, both politically and culturally.
And finding a film that might line up with that. And I'm looking for resonances, echoes, essentially, so that one's experience of a particular film is emotionally heightened by the things that are actually happening around them.
After a few minutes more on the film's history, Kelly dims the lights and heads to a 16-millimeter projector positioned on a makeshift wooden platform. Canonic's Andy Graham says part of the mission is to demystify the movie-going experience.
So you get to see the projector, you get to hear the projector, you get to see the films in their physical presence around you. We're really trying to open it up so that there's an inclusiveness to it, so that you're no longer just a spectator, but you're contributing to everyone else's experience.
For the next 82 minutes, the crowd is rapt and laughing along with every silly plot turn.
It feels like sitting in a friend's basement watching a movie.
Puck Nickel has been coming to Canonic almost weekly for the last year. Like tonight, Nickel usually doesn't know the movie, but grew up watching old films and trusts that whatever Canonic is screening that week is worth seeing.
It's become something that I really look forward to in my week. Just like kind of get away and be like in this place. Like it's very, for me, it's very intentional of like, you know, sitting down to watch a movie, especially in public where you really got to not look at your phone.
It's just nice to hear everybody laughing. You can watch it at home, but it's not the same.
Kevin Bertolero is also a Wednesday night regular who says he's made new friends at the screenings and had some unexpected conversations with others in the audience.
We saw, I was Bringing Up Baby. And there was a woman sitting next to me, and, you know, she was several decades older, but, you know, she was laughing and telling me about the first time she had seen this, you know, back in a theater many years ago.
To date, the cinema has been limited to showing 16-millimeter films, but is installing two high-end 35-millimeter projectors from a donor in Los Angeles. They were once used by filmmakers to view final cuts and are considered a rare find that will allow Canonic to screen about 30 more titles from its growing collection. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nicole Ugrisco.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 tomorrow morning, Creativity Choice. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.